Hey, folks, thanks for tuning back into the Eye on College Football podcast here on CBSSports.com. I'm your host, Chip Patterson, and joining me today, as he always likes to do, normally during the regular season, we have the Rewind podcast, and we like to go back and sort of digest everything that happened to kick off the week. And last week was, obviously, we had our National Signing Day. All of the FBS schools, they had the fax machines on. The faxes came through. Sometimes it took a couple tries, you know, to get all those signatures right. But we have a new class of 2013. And to rewind on recruiting, I'd like to welcome back Tom Fornelli. Tom, how did you enjoy your full week of recruiting coverage for National Signing Day?
Oh, who doesn't love National Signing Day and all that goes with it? Is we are forced to watch 18-year-old kids hold press conferences where they pick up hats and say, this is where I'm going to school. And then we don't hear about them usually for 2 or 3 years after that. It's the most wonderful day of the year.
It's the perfect timing, too, because it always falls sort of right after the Super Bowl, where college football has had about a month to sort of lay low and simmer. We had the fantastic Manti Te'o Lenny Kakua story to follow. But, you know, this, you almost trick yourself into believing, like you said, that a lot of these guys are going to be changing your team's fortunes right away. And I did want to start there, sort of putting it in perspective. I felt that National Signing Day and recruiting in general is very, very important. However, maybe the way that we treat it and the way that we cover it, especially on that one Wednesday a year, it almost, you know, makes the fans believe that that's going to have a long-lasting impact, when in fact it's really more of a numbers game and trying to make sure that you're putting all the right pieces together. How do you sort of justify National Signing Day as a college football fan, but also from, you know, our position here covering the sport?
It's very anticlimactic in a way, because, like you said, recruiting is very important. I mean, you're not going to be a very good football program if you don't recruit well over the long run. But it's just like on that day when, you know, the top names are usually, like, a lot of the top players will wait as long as possible before making their decision, just because, you know, they, quote, you know, in a way, they kind of want the attention. They want to have that televised news conference. But, you know, you get, as a fan, you get excited because, you know, this player has announced he's going to your school, and it's awesome, and you're really looking forward to it. But by and large, most of these players, like I said, once they commit, they'll commit on National Signing Day, and then, you know, they'll show up in the fall for camp and practice. They'll be on the team. But they won't actually play, usually, for at least 2 years. Very rarely are freshmen getting on the field, you know, as major contributors, unless you're one of the top guys. So in that way, it's like, hey, look, we got a great recruiting class. This is awesome. Now I just have to wait a couple of years to see if it has any impact on the team. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. And I wonder, too, well, I don't wonder. I would say that a big part of this is the way that college football and college football fandom, you know, you're so loyal to your school, but also now you're just, you want to get the guys just so that the other people can't have them. And you see this so often where you want to make sure that your guy is saying your school, because not necessarily because you think he will change your team around and help you win a conference championship, but just because someone's told you that guy's good, and now you get to say, I've got this, and you don't.
Yeah, you get to say, you know, suck it, Auburn, roll tide. You know, it's just another, for fans, it's just another opportunity to brag about something. And also, it's because it's, in a way, National Signing Day kind of marks the actual end of the football season. At least that's how I look at it. You know, you got the bowl games and the national title game, and then, you know, a couple weeks go by, and then National Signing Day happens, and it's like the last quote-unquote game of the year before the long off season comes in, where, you know, you got a spring game. But let's be real, you ever watched a spring game? I mean, there's not exactly
unfortunately, yes, but I know what you're saying.
It's some of the most boring. It's literally just, it's a scrimmage, and it's really boring, and it doesn't really mean anything, but, you know, it's the only football you have for the next 5 months, so you kind of pay attention to it. But I think a lot of it has to do with that. It's just, you know, another chance for fans to brag about something. It's really the last bit of football most people are getting for a while. So I think that part of the appeal of it too.
Yeah, and you know, again, recruiting is important. So one of the things that we're going to do today on the show is Tom and I have each made a list of five players are Power Five prospects. These are not necessarily the top rated according to 247sports.com. These are just simply the players that we are looking forward to seeing once they finally take the field for their respective teams. So, Tom, I'm going to start with you. You've won the toss and elected to receive. Who is your number five player that you're looking forward to seeing?
Number five player, well, I didn't really put him in order, but I'm going to start with running back Derrick Green, who is from Virginia. He's a five-star running back, considered one of the top in the country, and he's going to Michigan. And I put him on the list because, like I was saying, very few of these players have a chance to really have an impact their first year. Green is one of them because of the injury situation with Fitzgerald Toussaint at Michigan and then Vincent Smith graduating. It's just, it's, you look at the depth chart of Michigan, he's got, if he, you know, comes into camp this summer and fall and plays well, he might not be starting the first week of the year, but by the time the season's over, he's going to be getting a lot of carries. And as we know, with Michigan finally transitioning into that pro-style offense that Brady Hoke loves, there's going to be a lot of carries to go around. So he's the kind of player this year in this class that could have a huge impact on how Michigan does this year.
That's right. That is one of many. We are going to get to this later, but it did seem to me like the Big Ten's got a lot of instant impact possibilities. My number five is our boy Alex Collins, the five-star running back from Florida, who there was a little bit of an issue with his letter of intent. His mother didn't want him to go to Arkansas, but eventually they were able to get his father to sign, and he will be headed to the Razorbacks. And part of this, 50% of it, is I want to see how this plays out, because it has got to be awkward the first time that parents come in and Coach Bielema and Alex Collins' mother, if they do happen to exchange words. I'd be fascinated to know how that goes. But also for players that have dramatic twists and turns on signing day, sometimes it's a preview of whether or not it's going to work out. Isaiah Crowell pulled out a bulldog to announce that he was going to Georgia, yet he's not even there anymore. It's just one of those first characters, I guess, more than anything, that I'm looking forward to see. Also, Bielema, you know, wants to run the ball, and he believes that 5'11", 240-pound Collins, he can be that guy.
Yeah, no, it's that story is just so, I mean, it's been covered off. That story was strange. Could you imagine if, you know, you're having your national letter, you know, you're signing a press conference, Chip, you're a cornerback, you're from North Carolina, you're going to the ACC or SEC, you don't know, but you're having your announcement, and your mom suddenly comes and takes your letter of intent and runs out to school with it. I mean, could you just, I mean, I don't even know, I don't want to get into, you know, I don't want to speculate on the kid's family life, but it's just, that is some strange stuff, and it's like it kind of explains to you why he's leaving Miami to go to Fayetteville, Arkansas.
Yeah, it was just funny because, you know, we were waiting for our weird story of the day, and then all of a sudden, right there on the ESPNU broadcast, Reese Davis throws it to the correspondent on the scene. Correspondent on the scene says, the mother has taken the letter of intent papers and is missing. What? What happened?
You know, I love it. It was, according to multiple sources, his mother has stolen. You got sources on this? You didn't just see, I mean, did anybody see her run it and take it? Was there a second stealer? You know, what the hell's going on with her?
It was a situation that was perfect for LSU Freak to make a gift for it for lots of jokes. I mean, the amount of time it took for us to start coming up with jokes about how Alex Collins' mother has SEC speed was, you know, minimal.
Yeah, it was quick.
Yeah,
very, very quick.
All right, who's give me your next one? Your number four prospect you were looking for in your Power Five.
I'm actually I'm staying at Michigan, but this isn't a player that I think is going to have an impact this year. And I'm not even sure how great of a player he's going to be in college. But if it was based on his name, he would be an All-American for sure. For he is named Taco Charlton. His name is Taco, Chip.
T-A-C-O?
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know if he's a Doritos taco, like a Loco taco, or if he's just a regular taco. But I hear that his hits pack a crunch, and I would like to see him on the football field.
Taco Charlton's hits pack a crunch.
Mm-hmm.
What position does he play?
He's a defensive lineman.
Nice.
So he will be crunching running backs and quarterbacks in the backfield for years to come as a Wolverine.
My number four is Kendall Fuller. He is the five-star cornerback, younger brother of current Virginia Tech Hokie Kyle Fuller. Kyle Fuller is an all-conference level, sort of borderline, all-conference level defensive back, and people say that Kendall is even better. Kendall is incredibly athletic, has played a little bit on both sides of the ball, and there's a chance that Virginia Tech, which is, you know, a program, and it feels like in the state of flux right now, especially after the 10-win season streak ends, the bowl streak almost ends. They sort of waffled their way through a 6-6 regular season before getting the bowl win. If Kendall Fuller is that type of five-star prospect that can play on both sides of the ball and create some excitement around there, I think that could be interesting. Give me your next one. Who's your number three guy?
This is actually, I chose this player. He ended up in Florida, but it's more because even though there wasn't any drama surrounding him on National Signing Day as he'd committed earlier, during his recruitment, he changed his, you know, he committed to three different schools, and that's five-star linebacker Alex Anzalone, who started as an Ohio State commit until there, I believe it was on Twitter, he was getting tweeted at by an Ohio State fan on Twitter who actually turned out to be a sex offender, and it kind of freaked Alex and his family out, so he decommitted from Ohio State and then went to Notre Dame. And while there are no reports of him being tweeted by a sex offender who happens to be a Notre Dame fan, after being committed there for a while, he left the Irish and committed to Florida, which is where he signed last week. So with all the fuss surrounding Anzalone, and he is a five-star prospect, so there's a lot of fuss, and all the the change of minds he had, which I don't begrudge any of these kids for doing. This is a big, it's a big decision in your life. So if you're going to change your mind, it's one of the things that bothers me is when these kids get yelled at by fans who are like, oh, you're a traitor, I hope you're terrible, just that kind of stupid crap. But for all the attention that was based on him and his recruitment, I'm interested to see what he could do on the field. And, he's going to be playing for Will Muschamp on a defense that's pretty good, so he's going to have a chance to be good.
Yeah, I that story was so bizarre. Sorry, that gives me the heebs thinking about that. My number three is Christian Hackenberg, Penn State quarterback. He was the top recruit. Then when all the NCAA sanctions were handed down, there was all the attrition. There was, people wondered, will the 6'4" pro style quarterback, is he going to waver, decide to go somewhere else? And even before Penn State players were committing and not deciding to transfer, Hackenberg was coming out there. He had spent a year at Fork Union, so you assume the traditional thinking says he's going to be a little bit more ready. And, if you saw what Bill O'Brien was able to do with Matt McGloin, you got to think that a full career of Hackenberg studying under O'Brien, it's going to be promising. My question to you, Tom, do you think that Hackenberg, my number three player, do you think he will be able to make an impact instantly in 2013?
I think he could. I mean, Penn State also brought in one of the top JUCO quarterbacks in the country, Ferguson. So I think I'd give Ferguson the edge because he's in there early, and I think he'll have the edge going into this camp this fall. But, I wouldn't be surprised if Hackenberg is on the field. And like you were saying, he was committed to Penn State the entire time throughout all this because he was very upfront from the beginning. He said, I want to play for Bill O'Brien. I've seen what he did for Tom Brady. He's like, I want, because, Hackenberg's got not just his college in mind, he's got his future in mind. And he knows that playing for O'Brien is a very good thing that could help him get to the NFL. And yeah, he might play this year. I still lean towards Ferguson, but if Hackenberg's getting snaps or starting before the year's over, I wouldn't be surprised.
All right, so we've got Michigan running back Derek Green, Arkansas running back Alex Collins, Michigan defensive lineman Taco Charlton, Virginia Tech defensive back Kendall Fuller, Florida's Alex Anzalone, Christian Hackenberg at Penn State. Tom, we're down to two left apiece. Who is on your Power 5 prospect that you are looking forward to seeing in the college ranks?
Well, this one is a linebacker, a five-star linebacker, the highest-rated linebacker to attend this school since a guy with a fake girlfriend. His name is Jalen Smith, and though he's not a middle linebacker like Manti Te'o was, he's an outside linebacker who many people project will be a much better player at the college level than Teo was. And considering everything Teo did for Notre Dame, those are some big shoes to fill. And he's, by all accounts, I mean, I've watched the tape on him and seen video on him, and I can see why he's so highly rated. And it's very rare for an athlete of this caliber to come from, you know, Fort Wayne, Indiana, and he's staying home for Notre Dame. And I'm not sure he's going to be able to see the field this fall because Notre Dame does have some depth on defense, as we've seen. But he is the kind of player, I think, you know, when you saw Notre Dame play against Alabama, it was still clear that while they're definitely getting better, they could still take that next step to get, you know, to that next level. And I think Jalen Smith is that kind of player. So he's going to be a very interesting name and player to follow the next few years with the Fighting Irish.
I am very glad you picked him because my number two player was also a Notre Dame commit. It's our friend Eddie Vanderdoes right there on the front line, defensive tackle, 6'2", 310 pounds. And I was thinking, you know, he's from Auburn, California. He had an offer from Alabama. He was a USC commit. He decommitted. And, you know, just like you said with Jalen Smith, you don't know exactly how he's going to be used, especially with the depth they have in the front seven. But I think it's really cool that the combination of Smith and Vanderdoes, and I picked Vanderdoes just because of his quickness and his size. I don't know where he's going to fit in along that defensive line, but it feels like, at least just from watching a few clips and highlights and reading some scouting reports, both those players are very flexible, and they might be able to get moved around a little bit almost as an advantage for Notre Dame. Don't you think?
Yeah, I think Vanderdoes, if he continues to grow, and like you mentioned, he's already 6'2", at 310 pounds, so I don't know if there's much room left for growing, but I think he could be a perfect fit just watching the tape on him as a nose tackle in that 3-4 scheme. But he's also athletic enough, like you said, where he can move to the outside and play defensive end because, you know, in that 3-4 scheme, you don't really need the pass-rushing defensive end. But I think, you know, he's in penetration, he's quick off the line, and he's very strong. He's not just big. He's very athletic and strong. So, yeah, he's flexible, and I wouldn't be surprised if he does get some time on the defensive line this year because with Capron Lewis-Moore leaving and, you know, just Nick's returning and a couple, and Shembo and those guys, Brian Kelly likes to rotate his linemen and he likes to keep them fresh throughout the game. So I think Vanderdoes will see some time.
Nice. We're looking forward to that. And all right, rounding out your Power 5 prospects, who is your last guy, Mr. Fornelli?
I mean, I think this one's kind of obvious. I think it's probably the same as yours, even though I don't know the list. But how could you not go with Robert Kambice at this point? Because it's just, we heard so much about him, you know, and it was, he originally recruited to Clemson, but then the rumors were he was going to be, you know, he's going to decommit and he was going to go to Ole Miss. And then he was taking all those last minute visits to LSU and LSU. He was enjoying the visit and stuff, but he did end up going to Ole Miss. But it's just, when you look at the top defensive ends that have come through in recruiting the last year, you know, you look at the guys like Jadeveon Clowney, you know, Barkevious Mingo, guys like that who have been big recruiting names, and they've had immediate impact. So it's like with all the attention that's been placed on Kandice, I think that he's the type of player that can have an immediate impact, particularly on Ole Miss, where they're coming off a really good year and they have a fantastic recruiting class. But really, I mean, they're not that, there's not a ton of talent on that team. It's a talented team. It has to be if it won as many games as it did in the SEC. But there's definitely room for Kambice to see the field this year. And if he's as good as everybody's claimed he was and all the attention he got, he should see the field this year. So that, is, to me, is going to be his. Is he going to be the next Clowney? Is he going to be the next Mingo? Or is, you know, it going to be a little bit too much attention for his not enough talent?
I am so glad that you put him on your list because I left him off mine, kind of hoping you would. I know. Well, it was – all right, so I feel like I am ready for Robert Kambice, and I do not feel prepared for Ricky Seals-Jones, the Texas A&M wide receiver. 6'5", 235-pound, five-star wide receiver. He, one of the best wide receivers in the state of Texas, decides that he's going to commit. And that's the thing is his story almost flew under the radar because he wasn't undecided. He committed to Texas A&M in December 10th, you know, right there. It might have been the same weekend that Johnny Manziel wins the Heisman. And I'm just imagining, you know, what a step up in caliber of wide receiver. And, I mean, we have the Heisman Trophy winner coming back. And to think that Manziel being able to extend plays with his feet, you've got a 6'5 wide receiver that runs about a 4'5, 4'6, 40. I think that we're going to see some explosive plays from him. And he'll be a guy that I'm really looking forward to see, and I think he can make an immediate impact because an SEC secondary often gets to benefit from how incredible that front line is or how offenses might be running the ball a lot, and that's just got to be an absolute nightmare to think that you're going to have to cover this giant specimen for even longer than you're used to.
He's a big boy. I mean, he's going to be about the same size as a couple of those SEC linebackers. Forget about the defensive backs. He might be running over linebackers if he gets over the middle. Yeah, he's at, what, 230? Is he listed at? Yeah, so you're right. He did get lost in the shuffle because he committed so early and there was no drama, but that's a very good call on him.
Yeah, he'll be another one. All right, so in summation, we've got Michigan running back Derek Green, Arkansas running back Alex Collins, Michigan defensive lineman Taco Crunchy Hits Charlton, Virginia Tech defensive back Kendall Fuller, Florida linebacker Alex Anzalone, Christian Hackenberg, the quarterback from Penn State, Notre Dame outside linebacker Jalen Smith, Notre Dame defensive tackle Eddie Vanderdose, Robert Kim Dichie, the Ole Miss prize defensive end, and Texas A&M wide receiver Ricky Seals-Jones. That is your Eye on College Football podcast, Power 5 prospects from Tom and Chip. So I wanted to wrap the show with this one, Tom. Oftentimes, as we all cover the entire nation, but Tom is a bit of a Big Ten expert. And one of the stories I was reading as I'm kind of sort of collecting information from around the nation is Indiana's class, Michigan State's class. It seems as though the Big Ten have a lot of guys, or the schools believe they have people that can make an immediate impact. Who has really stuck out to you as a school where you might see some of these freshmen taking big roles, or what was your just overall impression of how the Big Ten did in recruiting? Because as you mentioned earlier, Ohio State and Michigan was really the only drama, but as we sort of put a wrap on the class in general, what stood out to you about the Big Ten?
There was definitely a very large chasm between Ohio State and Michigan with the rest of the conference, save for maybe Nebraska, and depending on who you ask, Penn State's class. But, like, you know, Urban Meyer got some guff last week for what he said about talking to other coaches about the conference stepping up its recruiting game. And people are going to get mad at him for saying it because people just like to get mad at Urban Meyer a lot. But he wasn't lying. The Big Ten's recruiting this year wasn't great. There's a lot of solid classes. I mean, there's no class in here that's, I think, ranked below 60th by any of the major sites, particularly 247. But if this conference is going to compete with the SEC, it needs to step its game up. But as far as teams with instant impact, I mean, you look at Michigan State, it didn't have a terrific class. It was ranked 40th by 247 Sports. So there's really no superstars on it, save for maybe dual threat quarterback Damian Terry. And he might see some playing time. Because if you just think of Michigan State last year, that offense, you know, with Le'Veon Bell and Deion Sims leaving for the NFL, there's no skill position player on that offense coming back where you're sitting there thinking, well, he's got to have a job. Because yeah. Andrew Maxwell last year was not very good. And Terry coming in as a dual threat player, if, you know, he's a four-star for 247. If he can, you know, if he can perform well in practice in the summer and the spring and fall before the season starts, he might wrestle that job away from Maxwell, or maybe Connor Cook will. But then also just, they got two running backs in the class, R.J. Shelton and Gerald Holmes, who aren't, you know, wow, you guys, but there are two guys who could definitely see a lot of time on the field just because there's a lot of carries to make up for with Le'Veon Bell leaving and the Spartans need running backs. Then elsewhere, like you mentioned, Indiana on defense, if you're in Indiana's defensive class and it was ranked 44th by 247, you're going to have a good chance to see the field because Indiana's defense last year was not good at all. So if you're coming into camp and you are half alive and you're hitting people in practice, you're going to have a chance.
Yeah.
And another school in the Big Ten, I think there's going to be a lot of freshmen on the field just because this team's young overall and doesn't have a ton of depth. And there's a reason that's why they went 2-10 last year is Illinois. They had 10 early enrollees this year, and five are from JUCOs, and then five are just incoming freshmen. So out of those 10, I wouldn't be surprised. You know, four of them are offensive linemen, and Illinois' offensive line was terrible last season. You look at a guy that got Dallas Hinkhouse from Iowa Western Community College, which, as Matt Hinton pointed out, Iowa Western Community College, just about everybody who started for that team last year, they won the national, you know, the junior college champions. Just about every single starter on that team is at a Big 12 or Big 10 school this year. And
Kansas got a couple
of them in Hinkhouse. What was that?
Didn't Kansas get a couple of them?
Oh, well, Kansas' entire team is going to be JUCO prospects next year. Charlie Weiss went all in on the JUCO route. But, yeah, there's a ton that went to Kansas. Some went to Kansas State, Iowa State, Illinois, and a couple. Like somebody else in the Big Ten landed a couple of them. I can't remember who it was. But just there's a lot of teams in the Big Ten that are going to have freshmen on the field next year just because there's a lot of lack of depth at a lot of schools. And particularly, generally, the worse the school did the year before, the more you're going to see freshmen on the field the next year after that.
Yeah, and it didn't get much worse than Illinois' 2-10 season. Not to bring up sore subjects.
And another player who might, you know, for Illinois who might see some time next year is their 4-star quarterback, much like Michigan State's Aaron Bailey, who's a dual threat quarterback. He's 24/7 had him ranked as the 5th best dual threat quarterback in the class. And Tim Beckman said on signing day that Bailey's going to come into camp and he's going to have a chance to compete for a job next year. So that's going to be interesting, him competing with Nathan Shielhouse.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. He is Mr. Tom Fornelli. Be sure to follow him on Twitter at Tom Fornelli, and be sure to follow the Eye on College Football blog at IonCFB. That's where you can get everything from Tom, myself, Matt Hinton, Jerry Hennen, Chris Houston. We keep you informed all around the clock. And be sure to go and get the Eye on College Football podcast. You can subscribe to it on iTunes and get all of them for free. Tom, thank you so much for helping us rewind recruiting here on the show.
I am so happy to have helped, and I am so glad recruiting is over.
That's right. Be sure to stick around the rest of the week. We will be reviewing some of the prospects. Chris Houston, the Heisman pundit, he sort tries to identify every single year, you know, who could be potentially the Heisman candidates. So we will talk to him. And then, as Tom said, we will be moving on beyond the class of 2013 and start to look forward. For Tom Fornelli, I'm Chip Patterson. Thanks so much for listening.